to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 11, 2020. Health officials are asking South Sudanese to respect COVID-19 related guidelines and rules.
Keep social distancing, prevent function that bring crowd together, consistently wash your hand, avoid handshaking.
And South Sudanese students studying in Egypt say they are unable to learn online.
The amount sent was tentatively. It was beginning to see, because we don't know for how long this COVID is going to continue. Some students have finished, they are supposed to come. Some are even here, they want to go back.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Ministry of Health is warning COVID-19 patients who are refusing to cooperate with health officials that their actions could pose threats to the fight against the pandemic. The spokesperson at the Ministry of Health says COVID-19 preventive measures is the best way of containing the spread of the virus, since the number of infections is expected to rise in the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Dr. Theo Low, spokesperson for South Sudan's Health Ministry, told a weekly media briefing on Sunday that the public must cooperate with the health workers in order for the country to reduce the number of new cases.
Keep social distancing, prevent function that bring crowd together, consistently wash your hand, avoid handshaking, and all those measures that are already, and that the media should be consistently, by the way, sending out on a daily basis to the public to adhere to. Otherwise, if we don't do that, then definitely we'll have full-blown outbreak of COVID-19 in the country.
South Sudan has recorded 156 cases, including two recoveries as of Sunday. South Sudan's COVID-19 high-level task force reported 36 new cases on Sunday. Besides the capital Juba, South Sudanese health officials have confirmed COVID-19 cases in Yei of Central Equatoria State, in Nimule of Eastern Equatoria, Rupkona of Unity State, and the disputed Abyei region, an indication the virus is now spreading across the country. South Sudan has a single machine to test for coronavirus. Three more testing machines were delivered from Khartoum, but health workers are still receiving training on how to use them. Dr. Matthew Toot, Deputy Incident Manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry, says laboratory technicians are able to test only 500 samples per week. He says the inadequate capacity for testing affects efforts to prevent the spread of the pandemic.
Something also that I want to mention clear here in the lab. Our capacity, as we mentioned, is very limited. And we only have one lab with one machine, and a lot is being expected outside there by our people. So now in the lab we have a backlog of more than 2,000 samples that has not been tested yet. And people are still coming in and bringing more samples and putting a lot of pressure that sample has to be collected and I need my result, for example, within 24 hours or 48 or 3 days, which will not be applicable unless we increase our testing capacity.
Since there is only one testing machine in the country, Toot says the health ministry is unable to carry out mass testing at the moment.
For the voluntary testing for now, there is no voluntary testing unless you are presented with COVID signs and symptoms, or you go to the Sentinel site for your sample to be collected.
Out of the country's 156 COVID-19 cases, only 18 are being managed at the isolation center, Toot says. Officials say some COVID-19 patients have refused to cooperate with the health officials, making contact tracing very difficult. Dr. Joseph Wamala, the WHO's emergency response officer in South Sudan, says refusal by some patients to help identify contacts hampers efforts to interrupt transmission of the virus.
The big threat they pose is, of course, to their immediate family members, the risk of transmitting the infection to their immediate family members, to their immediate family friends, but also to the community.
Wamala says people should not be complacent and take the pandemic seriously.
Because that is what we seem to see setting in. Because COVID is non-forgiving, and he repeated that so many times, it's non-forgiving. When it strikes, it really strikes hard. And I think we have a big vulnerable population that we need to protect.
As the number of COVID-19 patients increases, Loy says the COVID-19 task force will continue working with several agencies to fight the spread of the disease.
We will definitely need other actors to come on board in terms of taking care of the other elements that are outside the scope of the Minister of Health or the Health Sector for that matter. Feeding or taking care of those patients being one example, whether they are in quarantine or whether they are asked to be in isolation in their homes.
Despite growing number of COVID-19 cases, the task force last week lifted some restrictions aimed at containing the spread of the pandemic, such as allowing restaurants and bars to reopen in the capital. Public health experts say the decision was not based on science. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A main corona vaccine trial, a joint venture between an American and a German company, got underway this week in the United States. Some participants are U.S. medical students. The trial joins others around the world as pharmaceutical companies compete to discover the breakthrough for COVID-19. VOA's Caroline Pasuti takes us through what is being done and how.
Michael Sikorsky is about to make history.
Look in that corner.
He is the seventh medical student to get an injection of a trial vaccine for COVID-19.
One, two. I feel a sense of responsibility and obligation as a young, healthy adult who can participate in one of these early trials to do so.
Sikorsky and 360 others are in the first phase of vaccine trials run by Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech.
And you could do all of this from the outside.
The company is simultaneously testing four vaccines using a newer method called mRNA. The vaccine introduces part of the virus's genetic code through RNA. The body treats it like a foreign protein, which generates an immune response. Pfizer's Mikhail Dolstein.
And now the body is ready. It has memory. And once the real virus knocks on the door to infect us, we respond fast and intercept it.
The challenge for Pfizer is to prolong the life of the antibodies in the cells. Many drug companies are racing to become the first to conquer the virus. U.S. firm Moderna, along with the National Institutes of Health, is using mRNA in trials that began last month. Inovio has already started its efforts using a DNA method. BioNTech Pfizer began its trials May 5th, while China's CanSino Biologics is ahead of the others, already onto its Phase 2 trials. The University of Oxford in England started trials last month, and Wuhan and Beijing researchers are using a traditional trial method, injecting inactive viruses. The nation's leading infectious disease expert predicts the world will have an effective vaccine by October.
And then the challenge will be to scale it up enough to be able to distribute it meaningfully.
Meanwhile, participants like Sikorsky are monitored for vaccine safety.
So every night at 9 o'clock, I get a little buzz on my cell phone that reminds me about your safety diary. So I take out the thermometer that they gave me and I check my temperature. And then I fill out a series of questions, which include, do you have any aches or pains? Do you have fevers? Is there swelling?
If all goes well, a coronavirus vaccine is expected to be in circulation by the end of the year. An unprecedented rapid development for a vaccine. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
South Sudanese students studying in Egypt say it's tough to meet the high cost of accommodation, food, and healthcare during the COVID-19 lockdown. The head of the South Sudanese students in Egypt says since all classes were switched to online due to COVID-19, some South Sudanese students cannot afford the cost of internet. Manyang David Mayar spoke to the students via WhatsApp and has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking via WhatsApp from Cairo, the head of the South Sudanese students is studying under government scholarship in Egypt, accuses Juba of neglecting the students during the lockdown.
The students continue to suffer from high charges for accommodation in the hostels and additional fees from all colleges, which were not expected in the signed agreement. For the people and for the government to understand the culminations of all this suffering, others lost colleges and some suspended studies due to the deterioration of situation for accommodation.
South Sudan's high-level task force for COVID-19 approved $3 million in April to help South Sudanese students under government scholarship in Ethiopia, Sudan, China, India, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Serbia, Cuba, and Egypt to cope with their immediate conditions. Mayor says the South Sudan government provided $1 million, which was divided among students at nine universities, including those studying in Egypt, with each student receiving less than what the Ministry of Higher Education had announced.
The statement released by Education Minister was not a mistake, nor English pronunciation incompetency to pronounce $250 for each student. The minister was speaking live on radio and on television with professional English that $250 should be given to every student. Today, we ask the question, who is responsible for substantial reduction of $150 approved by the minister?
South Sudan's Higher Education Ministry says it received $1 million of the $3 million the COVID-19 task force approved. The ministry admits it did not remit the entire amount to its students as the future of COVID-19 remains uncertain. Adil Asnasio Surur, undersecretary in the Higher Education Ministry, says the ministry only pays $100 to sustain students for now as the ministry holds on to the rest to respond to student emergencies.
The amount sent was tentatively. It was beginning to see, because we don't know for how long this COVID is going to continue. Some students have finished, they are supposed to come. Some are even here, they want to go back. And we don't, some countries are even raising some questions of what will happen if any student falls sick.
Mayor says, aside from food and medical expenses, students in Egypt must pay $50 a month for accommodations, making the $100 sent by the government insufficient. He says students are threatening to occupy the South Sudanese embassy in Egypt if the government fails to explain the whereabouts of the remaining $2 million approved for students studying abroad. Undersecretary Surur says his ministry does not know the number of students studying under government scholarships abroad. His student leader Mayor says there are over 2,600 South Sudanese students studying in Egypt. For VOA News, I am Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at health workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from a church. The father was like, for those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future.
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَكْرَجًا. Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The COVID-19 pandemic has created fear and anxiety, and in many cases, grief and sorrow everywhere in the world. While many of us try to stay safe through isolation or social distancing, healthcare workers rush in to help the very people who might endanger them. In a new weekly series, we'll hear from American healthcare workers doing their best to cope while serving others. In part one, VOA's Adam Phillips speaks with Anthony Hendricks, an ambulance paramedic in Oakland, California, where the number of coronavirus infections in minorities is especially high.
Yeah, I get a call on the radio and also on our computer. We get on scene and either we'll gown up or mask up with our PPE or personal protective equipment, or sometimes we don't have time because someone is dying at that point. So we're walking up some flight of stairs with the EKG monitor to look at their heart rate, our airway bag, our drug bag to help save this patient.
So what happens when you get there?
So usually we'll meet a family member there that says, hey, my mom, my grandma, my daughter is sick. Then that's the hard part, is we have to figure out how we're going to be able to carry all of our equipment down with the patient to get them to our gurney. There's times where we have to make 2 or 3 trips coming back in and out of the house. And after we get the patient out, we'll put them in the ambulance. And then we treat as best we can while we're standing, trying to hold on while my partner drives. It's nerve-wracking because there's ventilation in the back, but we're in an ambulance with a patient that's possibly COVID, and it's very hard because my job is to save life. And now we have to worry about our own safety.
Do you guys have the supplies and equipment you need to protect yourselves?
At first, we had a lot of equipment, but we are running out now. We are reusing equipment, unfortunately.
Sounds like a brave new world.
I'm not sure if it's going to be good or bad, but medicine is definitely going to change now. We're able to do more things than we have been in the past because we're a state of emergency. And we're able to provide medications now that we weren't able to, like insulin, things like that. And now we're actually able to divide medicine up and give it to patients, which is good. We have the skills and the knowledge to provide better care now. But as a paramedic, I'm still worried, you know, because before all this happened, you would get a homeless gentleman coughing. You're like, oh, cover your mouth. But I think now that we're going to get that individual and they start coughing and we're going to be very paranoid. We're going to turn on all the vents. We're going to start doing medical treatments outside of the ambulance. And we used to do it normally in route to the hospital. And in the past, we would arrive at the hospital and walk in, talk to a nurse or a doctor and get a room. Now we're waiting in the ambulance for the patient, and then they have to do a whole bunch of screening to get the patient to the room. So when it used to be maybe 2-3 minutes from arriving to the hospital to get them to a bed, it's now 10, 15, 20 minutes. But some of those sick critical patients, they need to get in.
Are patients more resistant to being hospitalized when you come get them?
Yeah, it just happened the other night. It was a retired nurse that just retired a couple years ago, but she started having dementia and she was having some breathing problems and some chest pain, cardiac chest pain. And she didn't want to go to the hospital because of the COVID. She was very scared, but I was more scared that she might die from a heart attack or some kind of arrhythmia. It came down to a emotional argument where I said, if you don't go, you're going to die here. She said, I don't care, because she was more worried about not being able to come back to her residence because she would have to be quarantined.
I understand that the protocol in some places is not to try to revive patients if they've been dead for a certain amount of time, where before you might have.
It's not in California, but I know there has been protocols. It's in other areas where we're not going to try to make efforts to resuscitate. That's difficult because I want to do the best I can for the patient I'm dealing with right there, but also I want to continue my job to provide that care for future patients. It's mentally exhausting.
It must be tempting just to go numb sometimes.
There has been moments when I've been numb, but honestly, this is why I feel that I'm on this earth. Besides being a husband and a father, I love medicine. I love my job. It's amazing just to be there and to give my knowledge and my hope.
How do you maintain your own sense of hope through all this? Do you get therapy, for example?
Therapy, definitely. I'm also part of our peer support team. We use Facebook and other social medias to reach out to other coworkers and other friends. But the big thing is talking about what you're feeling, what you're going through, and to know that it's okay to have those feelings.
South Africa is entering its seventh week of strict restrictions on movement in an attempt to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Top officials say the strict measures have made a difference in transmission, but critics are calling for a swift end, saying the restrictions are now themselves a burden on an already battered population which has long struggled with inequality, poverty, and unemployment. The head of the opposition party on Friday called for an end to the lockdown, prompting the president to say the lockdown would eventually end but would be slowly and steady. Kenyan truck drivers transporting essential goods across the East Africa region say they are having a rough time at border points, especially in Uganda and Rwanda. The drivers say most of them are attacked on the way by locals and police officers who accuse them of spreading COVID-19. As Moreno Jembo reports from Nairobi, one Kenyan truck driver alleged that he was gang-raped by people believed to be Ugandan police officers.
The people are running away from us. They are saying if you see a Kenyan truck, somebody will alight from that truck is COVID-19 itself.
The Kenyan truck drivers picking goods from the port of Mombasa to other East African countries are facing hostility at the border points and while on their way to their destinations. Boy Juma, a Kenyan oil counter driver, said that on his way to South Sudan through Uganda, the local community and the police harassed him, making the travel difficult.
Drivers are not allowed to stop anywhere. It is like the community along the route have been incited against us. You stop somewhere, you are being pelted by stones. The community has become very hostile on us. Just go and stop anywhere that you are feeling tired and you want to stop anywhere. It is very difficult.
It took most drivers up to 7 days to reach their destinations before COVID-19 pandemic outbreak. Unlike now, where most of them are taking between 7 to 14 days awaiting to be tested before proceeding to their destination. Juma says the congestion at the borders exposes them to the virus and that most of them have already exhausted their mileage allowances, making it difficult for them to survive.
At the moment, drivers are leaving themselves in the bushes. There is no food. We are not being allowed to go to hotels. We have just been confined into our trucks and parking bay. Don't incite your people against foreign drivers who are coming from Kenya, Tanzania or so. We are also facing challenges. If it was our wish, we would also like to stay at home.
At Katuna-Gatuna border of Uganda and Rwanda, foreign drivers are not allowed to cross to Rwanda. Kenyan driver Kemani Njoroge was forced to give his truck to a Rwandese who is assigned by the state to take the goods to its destination, failure to which one has to pay up to $500 and be escorted by officers who monitor the foreign driver's moves.
Because I'm giving another truck driver to deliver the cargo instead of me, so that I will remain in the border until that driver returns my truck, then I proceed journey back to Kenya. If you refuse to exchange the driver, what you need to do is to pay $500 so that you can be given that escort. They take you to the destination. You are not authorized to move out from the yard.
The Kenyan government has made it mandatory for all truck drivers to undergo COVID-19 test before leaving for their destinations, promising a smooth move, but this seems not to be working for them. Yesterday, Sunday, Director of Public Health Francis Kuria said that all truck drivers will be tested 48 hours before they embark on their journey to neighboring countries. Kuria says the drivers will only make a stop at a designated point.
For any truck driver who starts his journey today must have had test 48 hours before starting the journey. So if you are a truck driver and you intend to travel to Malaba tomorrow, you may not do this because there will be checkpoints along the way that will be checking whether you have been tested and confirmed COVID negative.
Kenya and Tanzania are leading in the number of COVID-19 cases in the region. As Kenya records 672 COVID-19 positive cases, 239 recoveries, and 32 deaths as per yesterday, Sunday. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya. Yeah.
The European Union is urging peace partners in South Sudan to form state governments, dissolve and reconstitute the transitional National Legislative Assembly to avoid a vacuum in the local government. The EU delegation to South Sudan says parties to the revitalized peace agreement should put leadership structures in place and focus on holding people accused of committing crimes during the conflict accountable. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
A statement issued last Thursday by the minister in the office of the president, Maikai, says the major parties to the peace deal reached agreement on allocation of estates between the parties. But SPLM-IO leader and first vice president Riek Machar quickly disassociated his group from the statement, saying the decision on estate allocations should be made by the parties, not the presidency. According to Chapter 1, Article 1.9, Subsection 6 of the peace agreement, a decision by the presidency means that President Salva Kiir, the first vice president Machar, and the other four vice presidents make a collegial collaboration on an agreement, and in case of a disagreement, the matter be referred to the Council of Ministers, whose decision by a two-thirds majority shall be final. Sinead Wells, the EU ambassador to South Sudan, says the role of both regional bloc, IGAD, and African Union are still very important to make sure South Sudan's peace process stays on track. According to the EU Council resolution on South Sudan, the parties failed to meet deadlines to form the government in its entirety, and that, says Wales, poses a threat to the peace deal.
We are very concerned that already we're seeing some missed deadlines, including the deadlines last week for the dissolution of the parliament. So we really want to urge the Artiganu and its leadership to really concentrate minds to find the solutions so that the rest of the government can be established, because I think there is a vacuum at the moment, and you need the full government together so that you can proceed with the business of governance in a normal sense, and also the special challenges posed by COVID.
Wales says some 1,000 forces, including the VIP Protection Force, that are supposed to be trained and deployed, are stuck in limbo at most sites since training was halted due to COVID-19. Wales says the reconstituted government of national unity needs to ramp up implementation of security arrangements.
We are really urging more progress on the security arrangements, including unifying or demobilizing the ex-combatants. And the last point there is that we call on the UN Security Council to renew the arms embargo.
Only after the government is fully formed will the people of South Sudan see real reforms, including ending rampant corruption, according to Wales.
Particularly the fight against corruption. Then we go on to talk about the need for widespread violations of human rights and impunity to end, for example, gender-based violence. We talk about the transitional justice institutions and how important it is that they're set up in the short term, including the hybrid court.
Wales says the EU hopes to reach some kind of arrangement with the South Sudan government in order to accomplish those reforms in the peace process. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Children of the Soil by Rhymers.
Still shooting and chopping with pangas for no reason. Shall we ever stop the blood flowing? Yal Sudania, Maclean J, Sak J, Enfed J, aka Ewa Rhymers, fighting for peace, good enough.
We are fighting for equality, fraternity, and liberty in all the.
We've been listening to Rhymers with the song Children of the Soil. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
No peace lives without water. Civilians are like a water body. A nation to develop, not a single passion, tribe or region for paternity. We need to struggle as a team. People remember we suffered. Unite to heal their wounds in order to repair the damages.